6. This next day, the very Sunday which was to decide Stepan Trofimovitch's fate irrevocably, was one of the most memorable days in my chronicle. It was a day of surprises, a day that solved past riddles and suggested new ones, a day of startling revelations and still more hopeless perplexity. In the morning, as the listener is already aware, I had, by Varvara Petrovna's particular request, to accompany my friend on his visit to her, and at 3 o'clock in the afternoon I had to be with Lizaveta Nikolaevna in order to tell her, I did not know what, and to assist her, I did not know how. And meanwhile, it all ended as no one could have expected. In a word, it was a day of wonderful coincidences. To begin with, when Stepan Trofimovitch and I arrived at Varvara Petrovna's at 12 o'clock punctually, the time she had fixed, we did not find her at home. She had not yet come back from church. My poor friend was so disposed, or, more accurately speaking, so indisposed that this circumstance crushed him at once. He sank almost helpless into an armchair in the drawing-room. I suggested a glass of water, but in spite of his pallor and the trembling of his hands, he refused it with dignity. His get-up for the occasion was, by the way, extremely recherche, a shirt of batiste and embroidered, almost fit for a ball, a white tie, a new hat in his hand, new straw-coloured gloves, and even a suspicion of scent. We had hardly sat down when Shatov was shown in by the butler, obviously also by official invitation. Stepan Trofimovitch was rising to shake hands with him, but Shatov, after looking attentively at us both, turned away into a corner and sat down there without even nodding to us. Stepan Trofimovitch looked at me in dismay again. We sat like this for some minutes longer in complete silence. Stepan Trofimovitch suddenly began whispering something to me very quickly, but I could not catch it, and indeed he was so agitated himself that he broke off without finishing. The butler came in once more, ostensibly to set something straight on the table, more probably to take a look at us. Shatov suddenly addressed him with a loud question.
"Alexei Yegorych, do you know whether Darya Pavlovna has gone with her?"
Varvara Petrovna was pleased to drive to the cathedral alone, and Darya Pavlovna was pleased to remain in her room upstairs, being indisposed, Alexei Yegorych announced formally and reprovingly. My poor friend again stole a hurried and agitated glance at me, so that at last I turned away from him. Suddenly a carriage rumbled at the entrance, and some commotion at a distance in the house made us aware of the lady's return. We all leapt up from our easy chairs, but again a surprise awaited us. We heard the noise of many footsteps, so our hostess must have returned not alone, and this certainly was rather strange, since she had fixed that time herself. Finally, we heard someone come in with strange rapidity, as though running, in a way that Varvara Petrovna could not have come in. And all at once she almost flew into the room, panting and extremely agitated. After her, a little later, and much more quickly, Lizaveta Nikolaevna came in, and with her, hand in hand, Maria Timofievna Lebyadkin. If I had seen this in my dreams, even then I should not have believed it. To explain their utterly unexpected appearance, I must go back an hour and describe more in detail an extraordinary adventure which had befallen Varvara Petrovna in church. In the first place, almost the whole town, that is, of course, all of the upper stratum of society, were assembled in the cathedral. It was known that the governor's wife was to make her appearance there for the first time since her arrival amongst us. I must mention that there were already rumours that she was a free thinker and a follower of the new principles. All the ladies were also aware that she would be dressed with magnificence and extraordinary elegance, and so the costumes of our ladies were elaborate and gorgeous for the occasion. Only Varvara Petrovna was modestly dressed in black, as she always was, and had been for the last 4 years. She had taken her usual place in church, in the first row on the left, and a footman in livery had put down a velvet cushion for her to kneel on. Everything, in fact, had been as usual. But it was noticed, too, that all through the service she prayed with extreme fervour. It was even asserted afterwards, when people recalled it, that she had had tears in her eyes. The service was over at last, and our chief priest, Father Pavel, came out to deliver a solemn sermon. We liked his sermons and thought very highly of them. We used even to try to persuade him to print them, but he never could make up his mind to. On this occasion, the sermon was a particularly long one. And behold, during the sermon, a lady drove up to the church in an old-fashioned hired droshky, that is, one in which the lady could only sit sideways, holding on to the driver's sash, shaking at every jolt like a blade of grass in the breeze. Such droshkies are still to be seen in our town. Stopping at the corner of the cathedral, for there were a number of carriages and mounted police, too, at the gates, the lady sprang out of the droshky and handed the driver 4 kopecks in silver. "Isn't it enough, Vanya?" she cried, seeing his grimace. "It's all I've got," she added plaintively. "Well, there, bless you. I took you without fixing the price," said the driver with a hopeless gesture, and looking at her, he added, as though reflecting, "And it would be a sin to take advantage of you, too." Then, thrusting his leather purse into his bosom, he touched up his horse and drove off, followed by the jeers of the drivers standing near. Jeers and wonder, too, followed the lady as she made her way to the cathedral gates, between the carriages and the footmen waiting for their masters to come out. And indeed, there certainly was something extraordinary and surprising to everyone in such a person suddenly appearing in the street among people. She was painfully thin, and she limped. She was heavily powdered and rouged. Her long neck was quite bare. She had neither kerchief nor pelisse. She had nothing on but an old dark dress, in spite of the cold and windy, though bright, September day. She was bareheaded, and her hair was twisted up into a tiny knot, and on the right side of it was stuck an artificial rose, such as are used to dedicate cherubs sold in Palm Week. I had noticed just such a one with a wreath of paper roses in a corner under the icons when I was at Maria Timofievna's the day before. To put a finishing touch to it, though the lady walked with modestly downcast eyes, there was a sly and merry smile on her face. If she had lingered a moment longer, she would perhaps not have been allowed to enter the cathedral, but she succeeded in slipping by, and entering the building, gradually pressed forward. Though it was halfway through the sermon, and the dense crowd that filled the cathedral was listening to it with absorbed and silent attention, yet several pairs of eyes glanced with curiosity and amazement at the newcomer. She sank onto the floor, bowed her painted face down to it, lay there a long time, unmistakably weeping, but raising her head again and getting up from her knees. She soon recovered and was diverted. Gaily, and with evident and intense enjoyment, she let her eyes rove over the faces and over the walls of the cathedral. She looked with particular curiosity at some of the ladies, even standing on tiptoe to look at them, and even laughed once or twice, giggling strangely. But the sermon was over, and they brought out the cross. The governor's wife was the first to go up to the cross, but she stopped short 2 steps from it, evidently wishing to make way for Varvara Petrovna, who, on her side, moved towards it quite directly, as though she noticed no one in front of her. There was an obvious and, in its way, clever malice implied in this extraordinary act of deference on the part of the governor's wife. Everyone felt this. Varvara Petrovna must have felt it too, but she went on as before, apparently noticing no one, and with the same unfaltering air of dignity kissed the cross and at once turned to leave the cathedral. A footman in livery cleared the way for her, though everyone stepped back spontaneously to let her past. But just as she was going out, in the porch, the closely packed mass of people blocked the way for a moment. Varvara Petrovna stood still, and suddenly a strange, extraordinary creature, the woman with the paper rose on her head, squeezed through the people and fell on her knees before her. Varvara Petrovna, who was not easily disconcerted, especially in public, looked at her sternly and with dignity. I hastened to observe here, as briefly as possible, that though Varvara Petrovna had become, it was said, excessively careful and even stingy, yet sometimes she was not sparing of money, especially for benevolent objects. She was a member of a charitable society in the capital. In the last famine year, she had sent 500 rubles to the chief committee for the relief of the sufferers, and people talked of it in the town. Moreover, just before the appointment of the new governor, she had been on the very point of founding a local committee of ladies to assist the poorest mothers in the town and in the province. She was severely censured among us for ambition, but Varvara Petrovna's well-known strenuousness and, at the same time, her persistence nearly triumphed over all obstacles. The society was almost formed, and the original idea embraced a wider and wider scope in the enthusiastic mind of the foundress. She was already dreaming of founding a similar society in Moscow, and the gradual expansion of its influence over all the provinces of Russia. And now, with the sudden change of governor, everything was at a standstill, and the new governor's wife had, it was said, already uttered in society some biting and, what was worse, apt and sensible remarks about the impracticability of the fundamental idea of such a committee, which was, with additions, of course, repeated to Varvara Petrovna. God alone knows the secrets of men's hearts, but I imagine that Varvara Petrovna stood still now at the very cathedral gates, positively with a certain pleasure, knowing that the governor's wife and, after her, all the congregation would have to pass by immediately. And let her see for herself how little I care what she thinks, and what pointed things she says about the vanity of my benevolence. So much for all of you. "What is it, my dear? What are you asking?" said Varvara Petrovna, looking more attentively at the kneeling woman before her, who gazed at her with a fearfully panic-stricken, shame-faced but almost reverent expression, and suddenly broke into the same strange giggle. "What does she want? Who is she?" Varvara Petrovna bent an imperious and inquiring gaze on all around her. Everyone was silent. "You are unhappy? You are in need of help?"
"I am in need. I have come," faltered the unhappy creature, in a voice broken with emotion. "I have come only to kiss your hand."
Again she giggled, with the childish look with which little children caress someone, begging for a favour. She stretched forward to seize Varvara Petrovna's hand, but, as though panic-stricken, drew her hands back. "Is that all you have come for?" said Varvara Petrovna with a compassionate smile, but at once she drew her mother-of-pearl purse out of her pocket, took out a 10-ruble note, and gave it to the unknown. The latter took it. Varvara Petrovna was much interested, and evidently did not look upon her as an ordinary low-class beggar.
"I say, she gave her 10 rubles," someone said in the crowd.
"Let me kiss your hand," faltered the unknown,
holding tight in the fingers of her left hand the corner of the 10-ruble note, which fluttered in the draught. Varvara Petrovna frowned slightly, and, with a serious, almost severe face, held out her hand. The cripple kissed it with reverence. Her grateful eyes shone with positive ecstasy. At that moment, the governor's wife came up, and a whole crowd of ladies and high officials flocked after her. The governor's wife was forced to stand still for a moment in the crush, Many people stopped. "You are trembling. Are you cold?" Varvara Petrovna observed suddenly, and flinging off her pelisse, which a footman caught in mid-air, she took from her own shoulders a very expensive black shawl, and with her own hands wrapped it round the bare neck of the still kneeling woman. "But get up. Get up from your knees, I beg you." The woman got up. "Where do you live?" "Is it possible no one knows where she lives?" Varvara Petrovna glanced round impatiently again, but the crowd was different now. She saw only the faces of acquaintances, people in society surveying the scene, some with severe astonishment, others with sly curiosity, and at the same time guileless eagerness for a sensation, while others positively laughed. "I believe her name's Lebyadkin," a good-natured person volunteered at last in answer to Varvara Petrovna. "It was our respectable and respected merchant, Andreev, a man in spectacles with a grey beard, wearing Russian dress and holding a high round hat in his hands. They live in the Filipovs' house in Bogoyevolyensky Street." "Lebyadkin? Filipovs' house? I have heard something. Thank you, Nikon Semyonich. But who is this Lebyadkin?" "He calls himself a captain, a man, it must be said, not over careful in his behaviour, and no doubt this is his sister." "She must have escaped from under control," Nikon Semyonich went on, dropping his voice and glancing significantly at Varvara Petrovna. "I understand. Thank you, Nikon Semyonich. Your name is Mademoiselle Lebyadkin?"
"No, my name's not Lebyadkin."
"Then perhaps your brother's name is Lebyadkin."
"My brother's name is Lebyadkin." "This is what I'll do. I'll take you with me now, my dear, and you shall be driven from me to your family. Would you like to go with me?"
"Ah, I should,"
cried Mademoiselle Lebyadkin, clasping her hands.
"Auntie, auntie, take me with you too,"
the voice of Lizaveta Nikolaevna cried suddenly. I must observe that Lizaveta Nikolaevna had come to the cathedral with the governor's wife, while Praskovya Ivanovna had, by the doctor's orders, gone for a drive in her carriage, taking Mavriky Nikolaevich to entertain her. Liza suddenly left the governor's wife and ran up to Varvara Petrovna. "My dear, you know I am always glad to have you. But what will your mother say?" Varvara Petrovna began majestically, but she became suddenly confused, noticing Liza's extraordinary agitation.
"Auntie, auntie, I must come with you," Liza implored, kissing Varvara Petrovna.
"Mais qu'avez-vous donc, Lise?" the governor's wife asked with expressive wonder.
"Ah, forgive me, darling, chère cousine, I'm going to auntie's."
Liza turned in passing to her unpleasantly surprised chère cousine and kissed her twice.
"And tell Maman to follow me to auntie's directly. Maman meant, fully meant, to come and see you. She said so this morning herself. I forgot to tell you," Liza pattered on. "I beg your pardon. Don't be angry, Julie. Chère cousine. Auntie, I'm ready." "If you don't take me with you, auntie, I'll run after your carriage screaming," she whispered rapidly and despairingly in Varvara Petrovna's ear. It was lucky that no one heard. Varvara Petrovna positively staggered back and bent her penetrating gaze on the mad girl. That gaze settled everything. She made up her mind to take Liza with her. "We must put an end to this," broke from her lips. "Very well, I'll take you with pleasure, Liza," she added aloud. "If Yulia Mikhailovna is willing to let you come, of course." With a candid air and straightforward dignity, she addressed the governor's wife directly.
"Oh, certainly. I don't want to deprive her of such a pleasure, especially as I am myself," Yulia Mikhailovna lisped with amazing affability. "I myself know well what a fantastic, wilful little head it is." Yulia Mikhailovna gave a charming smile. "I thank you extremely," said Varvara Petrovna, with a courteous and dignified bow. "'And I am the more gratified,' Yulia Mikhailovna went on, lisping almost rapturously, flushing all over with agreeable excitement, "'that, apart from the pleasure of being with you, Liza should be carried away by such an excellent, I may say, lofty feeling of compassion.' She glanced at the unhappy creature, and at the very portal of the temple. "'Such a feeling does you honour,' Varvara Petrovna approved magnificently. Yulia Mikhailovna impulsively held out her hand, and Varvara Petrovna, with perfect readiness, touched it with her fingers. The general effect was excellent. The faces of some of those present beamed with pleasure. Some bland and insinuating smiles were to be seen. In short, it was made manifest to everyone in the town that it was not Yulia Mikhailovna who had, up till now, neglected Varvara Petrovna in not calling upon her, but, on the contrary, that Varvara Petrovna had kept Yulia Mikhailovna within bounds at a distance, while the latter would have hastened to pay her a visit, going on foot, perhaps, if necessary, had she been fully assured that Varvara Petrovna would not turn her away. And Varvara Petrovna's prestige was enormously increased. "'Get in, my dear.' Varvara Petrovna motioned Mademoiselle Lebyadkin towards the carriage which had driven up. The unhappy creature hurried gleefully to the carriage door, and there the footman lifted her in. "'What? You're lame!' cried Varvara Petrovna, seeming quite alarmed, and she turned pale. Everyone noticed it at the time, but did not understand it. The carriage rolled away. Varvara Petrovna's house was very near the cathedral. Liza told me afterwards that Miss Lebyadkin laughed hysterically for the 3 minutes that the drive lasted, while Varvara Petrovna sat as though in a mesmeric sleep. Liza's own expression.